Today on Talk About That, John wishes there were ninja chiropractors and has some problems with Star Wars terminology. Meanwhile, I find out in the worst way possible that I dress like a slouch and yell at holograms of my dead parents. Plus a conversation about gratitude, contentment, and self-care. Today's episode is not sponsored by voicemails, when you should just text the person, but you also want to waste their time.
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com to join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Let's do it.
Pull up a chair, spend some time with a few friends. It's Talk About That. I'm John here with Johnny.
A few?
Well, we're a few friends.
No, we're a couple friends.
I think few can mean...
Few is more than two.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know, bro. I know couple is two, obviously.
The English language is my playland. And you've made a horrible mistake. Are those people that... There are people that bother me, though. The ones that say, like, it's 12 items or fewer... Not the 12 items or less line, right?
Yeah.
Don't those people, like, there's a line where even a grammar Nazi like me, I want to punch that grammar Nazi. Yeah. I think he's gone too far. Or she.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't want to assume.
Yeah. Yeah, I obviously care about grammar. But I was not an English major, and it shows.
Yeah.
I do think that grammar... The way that we use it, especially when we're all like freaking out about it, we have to remember that English changes over time. Often what was grammatically unacceptable at one point now is acceptable, and even the rule has changed. So it's kind of like fashion. When people freak out about fashion, I'm going, who is making the rules?
Yeah.
Like hey, everyone thought that looked stupid 10 years ago, and now everyone thinks it looks great. And I'm going, both be true.
Even the rule, I read this in an article one day about all the English rules that we live by now, and some of them were just like these weird, arbitrary 18th century whatevers, and they were just like, just being erudite, you know. And one of them was the dangling participle, like not ending a sentence on a preposition.
Right.
And that's totally, everybody was doing that. And this one is like decided that wasn't the way.
Right.
And we just, for whatever reason, that caught on. And now it's like, you just don't, you're going to fail the paper if you do that.
Doing so was unheard of.
I see what you did.
See what I did there? Yeah. When I am writing though, and I try, cause I really do try to end on a preposition. It sounds so pretentious to say, instead of saying that was the thing he was concerned about, to say that was the thing about which he was concerned. Right. And when you write it, you're like, man.
You feel like it's Dickens or something.
It really is. My editors will even go like, hey, it's okay. Just end it with the.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're like, we know what you're doing and it's proper.
Yeah.
But if it's a trade book, especially, it just sounds not. It does not sound like how people...
A trade book is like what? A book that people trade? Because they're like, you give me this and
do you have an Oreo? I'll trade for it.
Anything.
Yeah.
Bag of Fritos, whatever you got.
Well, we say trade book, Johnny.
Yeah. In the industry?
In the industry. In the biz. You're generally talking about like a 50,000 word book.
Okay.
That's that standard size that all the books you have, that, you know, the self help nonfiction trade book.
I'm for sure trading that.
So, but like a historical fiction or historical nonfiction, it's going to be like a huge book or a book that's a different size or a gift book. So trade just means like it's the standard book in the marketplace, Johnny.
Okay.
Have you ever traded one of my books for something? You probably have, like a nickel or a.
Have you ever seen one of your books at Goodwill or anything?
I think I've seen some. Yeah, yeah, I've seen some.
I think I saw one of our. Somebody sent us a photo of one of our old CDs from a Goodwill.
Yeah.
They were like, found this today. I was like, it's kind of heartbreaking, but also kind of like interesting. Like, what did they get for it? Did they donate it?
Someone held on to that.
I guess you give things at Goodwill. You don't get anything. Yeah, like, you're just donating.
Like McKay's or whatever, where you actually can go in and sell your old stuff. But
there's a buddy of mine, Aaron Weber, who's a comic, and he has a bit about seeing a number one dad hat at Goodwill. Uh-huh. And he was like, that's just like a sad story all around. Like, best case scenario, he's dead. You know, you know, if you lose the title of number one dad and you're still alive, that's awful.
Yeah, we don't want to know the backstory to this.
He left or whatever, and they're like, "Well, this hat's not Goodwill." Yeah. Every time I look at that hat, it makes me weep bitterly. So you take it to Goodwill. Well, best case scenario, he's dead.
Well, but or think about it: if you really were that upset, you would destroy the hat. So maybe they were hanging on to hope. They took the hat.
They want another number one dad.
They couldn't just let go of it.
Yeah.
They wanted someone else to maybe have
the funny
hope
thing
that
is the
lost.
Idea that a number the other number one dad is going to be shopping at Goodwill. Like, that's the mantle is passed that way to Goodwill shoppers. Which, look, if you're a Goodwill shopper, God love you.
I like Goodwill.
Yeah. So I've told you my story of going to the last time I went to Goodwill was to get outfits for the movie. I had this movie role, and it was supposed to be this guy who lived in a factory town. The whole plot of the movie, a buddy had written it for me.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, I've got this role. I think you'd be good for it. And then I couldn't do that role because it was going to be thug number one or thug number two. I was going to beat him up in the movie.
Wow.
Did I tell you this?
I didn't know you were
going
to be a thug.
I was going to beat him up because he thought, well, Johnny's a big guy, whatever. This guy's like a 160-pound Hollywood guy.
Yeah.
You know, my buddy Ryan. So he was like, you could beat me up. I go, yeah, I'll break you in half. I was probably 270 then. And so... But they couldn't shoot. I had a show. He goes, oh, we're shooting that part. He goes, I've got one other role. It's townsperson number one, which is what I ended up taking. But I had to shoot it. And then it was a night shoot. And then I had to be in Fayetteville, Arkansas the next day to do a show, like at noon.
Yeah.
So I had Dane drive me through the night after this shoot. But anyway, I had to have clothes. He goes, well, here's what you need. So they got in touch with me. His assistant got in touch with me about what I would need for the shoot. It's a, here's your role. It's a factory town. You're out of work and they're leaving a courthouse because the factory's being shut down. It's something about a Christmas parade. It's a Hallmark kind of movie.
Yeah.
It's not a Hallmark movie, but it's very Hallmarky. So the Christmas parade, they got to save the Christmas parade. Well, it's a factory town. The factory's being shut down, blah, blah, blah. So I'm one of the people that's outside, that's out of work. And I keep like, I push through the crowd to ask Mr. Payton, who's Ryan's character, to give me a job. That's my line. Mr. Payton, can you give me a job? That's my line. And scene.
Wow, you remember it.
Yeah. Can you believe? But I had to have clothes that kind of looked like I lived in a factory town in Grundy, Virginia, which is where this was set. So I go to, because I don't have any like flannels or anything. Everything I wear is a black t-shirt or a Henley or whatever. So I was like, I want to look whatever. So I go to get some old, you know, workman style clothes. And I was looking for like some Dickies, you know, work shirts. Couldn't find anything, but I found a few flannels. And then I had my dumb leathery gray jacket that I wore over it just to the shoot. And I was going to change into like a coverall kind of a thing over the flannel. And when I got there, I had all this stuff on a hanger, you know, like eight choices that I had bought, some boots and stuff. And then she goes, are you ready? Like the assistant's got a clipboard and headphones. She goes, are you ready? And I go, I just need to change. She goes, no, this is great. What you got on is great. I go, so I look. At that point, I realized I already looked like an out of work factory worker with my everyday apparel.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a moment. That's a
That's
an interesting way to
look
find
like
out.
An employed factory worker. I mean,
yeah, it's an interesting way to find out you don't dress so great.
It looks like you've been out of work a long time. And yeah.
Where do we get a local? This guy's amazing.
You have really pulled off the disheveled part so well.
When you wipe that black stuff on your face, you can wipe that off. We don't need that. Oh, I had black stuff on my face? I had no idea.
You don't have to mess up your hair. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look like I came out straight out of the coal mines.
Yeah.
Well, but anyway, I'm moisturizing now. Everything's better.
Speaking of moisturizing, by the way.
Yeah. Do you moisturize, John?
Johnny, no.
Okay.
And I was asked this. So, long story, but worth it.
We got time.
What else I got to do? So, about 4:30 this morning, I woke up and I have like this arm pain in my left arm. Now, Johnny, I don't know if you know medical things.
How is this going to end up having to do with moisturizing?
Trust me.
Okay.
It's going to get there. And so I have this like pain that's sort of radiating like elbow down. It keeps me up. But
that's
also,
not great.
Yeah. And with my family heart history, I'm like, you know. Mm-hmm. I just actually went to the Vanderbilt Lipid Clinic this week and they basically told me I was invincible. They're like, you're good.
You know? Oh, wow.
So, I mean, I've been eating just straight pies.
I got to go there.
Ever since. But no, I'm still doing other testing. But it was better than it could have been. So I'm like, man, it's like the day before Thanksgiving, and I can't sleep. It hurts. Like, it's hurting right now, actually.
Really?
Yeah. And so it's in my left arm. So I get up. When we wake up this morning, I take my blood pressure. It's pretty high.
Oh, boy.
Like, ooh, okay.
But that could just be the nervousness.
Correct.
Of
that
the
could
pain.
Be like me now. Yeah. So I run down to my doctor, and well, I didn't run. I drove.
I started to say that.
You know, your blood pressure is really high. I go in and they do an EKG. Well, so they will take off your shirt, lay down. So they're going to put these leads on you, these sticky pads. You know?
Right.
And then she couldn't get one of the leads of the EKG to work.
Okay.
Like, I mean, had to redo it like 4 times. And you know what she asked me? She was like, do you have lotion on? Like on my chest.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, no. And I was thinking, like, is that a thing?
You
like,
got a slimy chest. You didn't know
it. So to say I moisturize or not, that's where that came from.
That's
the second time today someone's asked me, basically, if I've moisturized. And Johnny,
well, you have such glowing, effervescent.
I've not been asked that once in the last 10 years. Maybe, yeah. Johnny, maybe ever. So,
well,
by the way, my heart was fine.
And that's good.
They think I just slept on my arm funny and then sort of tweaked the nerve.
Yeah.
He sort of traced the nerve path that's causing it down the top of my forearms. Like, could it not have been my leg or my right arm, you know? But he gives you this, you know. Are you the kind of guy, if you have a pain in your left arm, and could you rest?
I'll,
if you know you have cardiovascular family history? I'm just like,
man, I push things down pretty good. I do a thing of like, let's see if this still's bothering me tomorrow.
See, I don't want to,
you know,
Johnny, like, I want to have a tomorrow.
Like, my neck has been stiff. Like, I can't turn my head all the way. The way it should go.
Yeah, that's not a symptom of anything.
I don't know what it is, but I feel like I need... Are there people that just crack your neck? Or do you have to go to a chiropractor and him go, well, we need 2 years of treatment. Here's the plan. Here's $3,000
of treatment.
I don't think
you want someone who's not a chiropractor cracking your neck.
What I need... You know how, like, in those movies, like, Steven Seagal or Jean-Claude Van Damme will grab the bad guy and just go, kick-hack!
Right.
I need that, but, like, a little bit less. Like, not to where it kills me, but where it just... Wouldn't it be great if he did that to somebody and they were like,
oh, thank you. I was just thinking the same thing. We should make a spoof movie where they come up behind
him. You have no idea.
Him.
I've been having migraines for years.
Like the bad guy's got an Uzi and he's just waiting and the good guy sneaks up behind him and cracks his neck. And he's like, wow, thank you. And
that
then
is,
he joins in the fray of the good guy. It's what
turns
him
changes
around.
Him. Yeah.
This whole time it was just neck pain.
Yep.
Made him cranky.
It'll do it every
he
time.
He started killing people with Uzis.
Listen, you need to be in alignment. That's a spiritual concept, really.
Don't you, though? I will say, if someone is going to crack your neck, though, it better to not be done by surprise.
Yeah, no, you want to know it's coming. But if you know it's coming, you cinch up.
Like, if I was a chiropractor, I would do that to people. Like, sneak up like it is in the movie. Just crack them from behind without them knowing, you know. And then they feel better, but...
Yeah.
That'd be kind of like a... What if you had, like, a Steven Seagal as a chiropractor? Like, that's what he does.
Listen, he's done every other kind of movie at this point. I think he would do it.
Is he still doing movies?
Hard to crack. The Adjustment Bureau, but it's a different. It's a reboot.
Nice.
Anyway, yeah, I don't know, but I need something. But I just, it's getting some better, so I'm like, oh, slowly, it's getting better, so I'll just wait it out.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to go. How do you even explain it? Hey, I can't really. What doctor? Because then he's got to refer you.
It is a whole thing. Yeah,
and then doctors don't like chiropractors, and chiropractors don't like doctors. So they'll be like, oh, where have you been going to a regular physician? Well, I'll tell you what's wrong.
That's a blood feud from the beginning of time. I do agree that there. I do let a lot of things go.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to make that plain today because I felt silly. Like, look, I'm here.
No, I was glad because you called me and said, I got to push back breakfast. I'm going to go get an EKG. And I was like, wow. First of all, I thought, what kind of great primary care do you have that you can just be like, hey, I need to come by this morning for an EKG that you just found out about now?
Well, they have a bunch of doctors in the new, it's a building like right next door to us, basically.
They're just ready with the leads. Right when you walk in, they're like, do you have any lotion on? They're like, ready for you.
Yeah, it was. I didn't get to my normal doctor. I saw someone I'd never seen before. But
are you sure you were? John, I think you were at Jiffy Lube.
Like, I've never seen a person that's like not this before. I just pulled over the big bay.
Like, going up on rack four. It'd be great.
Your sensor's bad.
You've got
that's really what nerve pain is your sensor's
it
bad.
It is. You've got an O2 sensor that's
we're gonna need to
wonky.
Replace this, yeah. Yeah. It's they walk I told them, well, you walk in and say you have left arm pain, that helps.
That's
expedite.
True. Yeah, that'll get you past the guy that's just got like an oozing sore on his lip.
Right. And then the nurse, when I got in there, she was like, you know, really, if you had left arm pain this mm-hmm. bad, you probably should have went to the emergency room. And I was like, yeah, we debated that.
Yeah.
But my doctor's like next door to where I work and just thought surely we could just rule this out with an EKG and not.
Yeah.
I mean, to go in, have blood work. If I'm dying, sure, that'd have been a great choice.
Such like, this is so funny. Like, we get older, this is going to be what the show is. Just our different maladies. Just like what's hurting this week. So, we need like its own theme song.
Let's play Connect the Mole.
It is because I had blood work last week. I haven't had a physical in ages. And so I was like, I'm going to get blood panel because my buddy Rick was like, he had prostate cancer this year, and he was like, everybody go get your PSA test. He was telling all of his friends, go get a PSA. It's just a blood test. I go, I don't know what PSA
is. It's a PSA about getting
he gave PSA. A PSA about PSA. And he goes, it's a prostate level. It lets you know if you have any prostate cancer. I was like, it's just a blood test? He goes, yeah. I go, okay. So I scheduled some blood panel, like cholesterol, the whole nine. I was like, can we do a PSA while I'm there? So then they get back to me with my results. They're like, your A1C is normal. Your cholesterol's a tiny bit high. Just watch it. And blah, blah, blah. Everything was normal. And your vitamin D is a little low. Get on a supplement. I go, okay. And then I go, what happened with the PSA? You know what? We forgot to run it. We've still got blood, though, from you. So we'll run it now. We'll let you know tomorrow. And then I go, okay. That's really one of the ones I really wanted to know about.
Right.
Okay. And then that same day, it wasn't even the next day. It was that same day at like 4:57. I'm coming home. I was riding my bike. And I was coming home from riding my bike, and I'm driving near the exit, luckily near the exit where my doctor's office is, and I get a phone call, and it went to voicemail too quick before I could get to it. And then I just listened to the voicemail thinking, like, I didn't recognize that number. It was my doctor's office, and she goes, hey, this is so-and-so at Simply Care. We need you to call us back right away. It's about your test results. And I go, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I call back. They close at 5, and they already had it set to go to voicemail.
Oh.
So I call the thing 10
into
times.
Friday.
I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
Like, you have results for me? That's the only one that's the hanging chad is my PSA. I literally, like, jerked my car off the exit and went to the thing, and I banged on the door, and there's one on-call nurse there, and she's looking at me like, is this a holdup? Like, she's looking at me like, because I was kind of panicked. She comes to the door, and I go, hey, you guys just called me, and I think she just clocked out right after she called me. It would have had to have been.
Yeah.
I said, but I was waiting on PSA results, and I had a friend who had prostate cancer. I really would like to know now rather than Monday.
Yeah.
She goes, oh, come on in. And she opened the door, unlocked it, and unbolted it, and then, like, she kind of unclenched a little bit. I think she was
stepped, you know, she walked backwards.
Yeah. It was very odd. I mean, I'm sure it was odd for her to just have, like, a random guy, because I was sweaty from riding my bike. I'm just, like, bang on the door, like, hey, I need to come in. But anyway, she goes, what's your name? She looked at me, and she goes, yeah, it's normal. And I go, okay. I said, can you tell Ashley to never do that again? She goes, what? I go, yeah, that's really bad bedside manner. I said, I love you guys, but don't ever do that. Don't call somebody at 4:57 on a Friday.
Hey, call us back about your results.
Yeah, don't ever do that.
There may be some HIPAA thing where she can't leave it in a voicemail.
It is, but I'm just saying, like, call me at 4:30.
Yeah.
Give me a little bit of a time frame.
Yeah.
I don't know. And maybe it would have been on their little portal, but I can't ever access the portal, John.
Ugh.
You know where you go to the thing and you have to create a login, and then they've created one for you, but it's like John Webb, 82 or whatever. And you're like, why would they choose that?
The mystical
portal.
So
you forgot it? I don't know.
Yeah, the portal. Yeah, the HIPAA stuff.
I don't believe in HIPAA. I just think everybody should know everybody's medical stuff and let's just be done with it.
I want to have the right in my life to be less secure with information
Thank you.
When I want to be.
Thank you.
If I want to be less secure with this. Like, sometimes when when I'm the one who's called the credit card company or whatever, I called you, and mm-hmm. and in the automated end of your system, I've already given you all of it.
Right, social, and then they have to get it again.
And
oh,
then
it's
I
brutal.
Know where the person. They're like, "Can you give me?" I'm like, "I've already given all this." And I called. It's like,
plus, there's still like when you walk into the doctor, you have to kind of stand at that glass window,
yeah.
and say the thing anyway. Yeah, I'm here about the. You know, you're
yeah,
like,
that, yeah.
and there's a whole group of other sick people.
Right,
they're leaning in. What's this guy got?
Yeah.
So there's still a little bit of, like, HIPAA's being violated everywhere anyway.
You know, if you go to the Kroger pharmacy window, it says that, be advised that if you have a conversation with the pharmacist, that people inside waiting in line can probably hear it through the microphone.
Yeah.
You know, just come
oh,
in and say,
true.
Just say something crazy, like, hey, I got that flesh-eating bacteria, and you got that ointment.
It's the contagious one.
Well, I mean, you're in your car, though, at least.
I got hepatitis Q. It's the new one. Anybody know what to do?
So you just go see your doctor. Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to say dang near killed
no,
him? No, John.
It's too predictable, Johnny. It's too predictable.
Oh, Lord. So tell me, okay, so as long as we're on maladies, you were intriguing me at breakfast, and I didn't want you to finish the story because I wanted to talk about it here. You went to some kind of, what did you call it? Counseling about your family history?
No.
It was a consult?
Well, I went to the Vanderbilt Lipid Clinic.
Right.
Okay. Because
not
I have,
a sponsor.
I have familial hyperlipidemia, which is meaning family based cholesterol.
Right.
So, like through
not
the,
familiar hypolipidemia.
No.
That's when you're like, oh, I know
yeah,
you.
I know you. Yeah. And so when it's and I've been on Lipitor and stuff my whole adult life, basically.
Yeah.
Which is right now, I'm thanking my wife for pushing me towards that because. That's yeah. actually really good.
Yeah, because you tried to get off of it many times. You're like, I'll just eat oat bran.
No.
And they were like, no, it went up. Your cholesterol
yeah.
went up somehow.
And then I even, you know.
There ain't enough Mueslix in the world to fix you.
Cheerios does nothing for you. None. And I even met with a dietitian for like an hour. And so they want me to decrease my saturated fats. I was like, look, yeah. I eat chicken wings.
That took an hour to say?
I eat chicken wings like 6 times a week. Like, can we talk about this? You know, if I lose, it's just, it's almost like the CEO who wears the same outfit to work every day.
Yeah.
That's my chicken wings, Johnny.
It's
okay. just, it's like.
You wear chicken wings to work every day? You're like, look, go with what works. And it's just you naked holding 2 chicken wings. Like, John, you're fired.
Also, we're committing you. Yeah. No, I'm saying like it's simplicity and
I get what you mean.
Yeah. And they're not a big fan of keto in the old
right.
cardiovascular
no.
world because
no.
of the high fats. So I'm not really keto. I'm more like low carb. And then I'm not all the time anyway. So it just depends. So she's like, I'm okay with low carb. Just
yeah.
And it adds
You're like,
grains.
What do I need to say to get out of this meeting?
Right. So she literally went and researched.
You're like, well, you just offered me a chicken wing. That's a non-starter.
She did bring me how much a chicken wing has in saturated fat.
Oh, she
so,
did.
Yeah, she went and researched.
She's like Googling stuff.
It's 2 grams.
Oh, okay.
So like she wants me to keep it under 20. So
and you're like, you don't eat a lot of these, do you? And you go,
no. You know, it's like 10 wings a day, Johnny. That's all
keeps
I eat.
The...
So, and so back to my left arm pain. So anyway, that was fine.
Right.
But when the doctor came in, I was like, look, shoot straight with me, doc. Like this familial stuff. Like
you said, shoot straight with me, doc.
Probably.
This is great. It's like a movie.
Like something I would say.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, we had spent a lot of time talking through my history and everything. I was like, look,
yeah,
could I really eat better and make this any different? I've tried that before, mm-hmm. and she was like, you know what, John? Probably with your family history, you're not going to just go eat a bunch of vegetables and suddenly lower your LDLs by 100. You're gonna need help, which
yeah.
is why you take the meds and stuff. You know, she said, but when you get to your 50s. You might have to meet us in the middle a little
yeah.
bit. Like, we'll help with the meds, but you're going to
yeah.
have to do something. And I was like, I got like 10 more years to worry about that now. So I'm going to eat whatever.
Right.
I'm done.
But the part of it that was intriguing to me
yeah.
was you said that they were going to bring your...
They are referring me to what's called a genetic counselor.
Yes, genetic counseling.
Yeah. And the reason is...
I love the idea of this.
So they can now, by doing genetic background checks.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's not right. Background checks, like genetic testing,
yeah.
and they can even bring my mom in. You know, we could look at her blood versus mine. They can tell if I've taken on the traits. I don't know if it's just for the hyperlipidemia.
Well, you can expect your pathway
like,
to be.
Did you inherit? Is it heterozygous or homozygous? Meaning, if it's homozygous,
yeah.
it's bad. That means you inherited the bad stuff of both parents.
Oh,
hetero,
really?
You only inherited one. They think I've only inherited one.
Which your mom's still alive and kicking.
Right.
She's had health problems, but she's still out there.
But really not related to that. She has high cholesterol, but that's not, you know, my dad died of heart disease and he had great cholesterol, you know, so.
Interesting.
So it's a.
So you're hoping for the.
Yeah, for the heterozygous. And that they can tell you which parents' genes you've sort of taken after, which I think is, it's really the big question I've asked knowing my dad had heart disease.
When you were talking about it, though, it just. Like, what if both parents are dead? Do they just bring in, like, holograms, and your parents are, like, floating like force ghosts? Like, sorry about the heart disease. Like, they're just haunting the meeting.
I don't know, Johnny.
That's what I want.
Is that what,
just to see them again. I just want to.
I don't think that.
I just want to see mom and dad again and just be like, how could you do this to
hey,
me?
Hey, guys, yeah.
Because I'm upset.
Could you have eaten some more Cheerios?
Yeah.
Something?
Could you work in a salad?
Yeah.
Or a sit-up?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Well, I don't know if a sit-up is going to help your cholesterol that much.
My mom smoked when she was 15. You know what's funny? My mom started smoking. She told me this. When my mom started smoking, she did it because she had asthma. Because back then, people smoked like menthol cigarettes because they thought it would help asthma.
Wow.
Like, isn't that crazy?
I don't even know what to do with that.
There were so many cigarette commercials back then that were just like, smoking's the best. And like, crazy little jingles and they're bouncing. Think
the menthol, like you said. Probably
they're holding a baby.
Clear.
Like, what were we doing?
Doctors performing surgery with a cigarette on the other hand.
You smoked on planes. Like, people got on planes. It was just like cabins full of smoke.
They made that movie with Samuel L. Jackson called Smokes on a Plane.
Smokes on a Plane.
I don't know if you ever.
Just too many.
Yeah.
You get the idea.
Yeah. But it just. Yeah.
It was a different time, and so we can't really hold our family completely responsible, but it is that thing of, you go, okay, some of this, you could have cleaned it up.
Did you watch Mad Men?
No. Need to.
So there's a whole arc in there with advertising guys and, like, the William Morris, you know, empire of tobacco, and when they in, it's around the time that they begin to really have data.
Yeah.
Of what it's doing.
Oh, and then covering it up and such.
And how long they keep going.
Yeah.
You know, because, there was a time where it was just considered, you know. There's also theories that the more pure the tobacco was back then without all the additives and the filters and stuff, it actually was less toxic than what we've added to it.
It's just funny to me, man. And then we marketed cigarettes towards certain groups, like Virginia Slims. I remember that when I was a kid, even like, you've come a long way, baby. Like, it was a like this attractive woman smoking a cigarette. Now it's like, you just wouldn't think of that. But back then it was just like, look at that cool lady smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It does look cool. I mean, candy cigarettes are that like, I could look like an adult.
Even when you watch an old movie and you see a guy smoking, you're like, what a cool dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always think about when I watch I watch shows about that time period, and every actor on the show is smoking, and I go, what it must smell like on that set.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think they have like tobacco-less cigarettes for those things.
Like clove.
Like
clove
some
cigarettes.
But even then, I mean, but something's on fire, obviously, but I don't know.
I think that's why it's cool. There's fire like this close to your face.
Yeah.
When the guy doesn't even care, he's just like, I don't care.
I'm controlling this fire.
Yeah. I'm breathing in the fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then breathing out the fire. Wait. I'm a dragon. What we're saying is, guys, we're bringing cigarettes back.
Don't start smoking, kids.
Yeah.
My brother started smoking when he was 14, and it blew my mind because... We grew up in a group home. My family started a group home when we were like 10, 9 or 10. So we grew up with like all these mentally ill folks in our house that we were taking care of.
Right.
And they all smoked. It was very institutional behavior.
Right.
So everybody smoked. So these guys are like coughing their lungs up all the time. And yet my brother like still, I don't know what it was. I've talked to him about it before. How did you even get, I don't know what it was. Maybe he just always saw it.
Yeah.
It made me want to stay away from it.
Yeah.
But he quit. I think he smoked for about 10 years, and he quit with the patch. Do people still use the patch?
Yeah.
Or do they do the, whatever, the pill? There's like a pill now where you...
There's still Nicorette gum and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
I think there's...
Yeah, I think it's hard to get off the gum. The gum can become a thing.
Really?
Because like there's a comedian, Mark Maron, does a podcast. He was on the gum for like 7 years.
But
he had stopped smoking, but he would chew the gum.
But it doesn't have any adverse health effects. It'd be okay to be addicted
to nicotine.
Gum. Right, but nicotine's not what kills you. It's the carcinogens in the cigarette, right? Nicotine's
maybe is nicotine still
nicotine's
bad
like
for
caffeine
you?
Or whatever. Like it's just a
It's inert? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it doesn't have any I don't guys, I'm sorry, there's no way to know this.
Wow.
I don't believe nicotine itself is,
kids, if you're out there.
Nicotine is what makes you have the good feeling from the cigarette, but it's the actual smoke of the tobacco. Mm. You're inhaling smoke into your lungs that causes the cancer.
This is like one long health PSA that we're doing today. This is like the health minute with
health episode with John and Johnny.
Talk about fat. Like it's a we're just talking about our health and our horrible.
I do. It's interesting you said that it caused you mm-hmm. to want to not do it. I think I was kind of that kid too a lot of the time, and not just with health things, but there were things if I saw someone in trouble.
Yeah.
And part of that was my people pleasing. Part of that was my legitimate desire to please God. And then also my fear-based desire to not be punished.
Yeah.
Or not to disappoint. But it really did, like, if there was someone I knew of my age or similar age, especially someone a little bit older in my family or whatever, they got in trouble, it made me, it was like a conditioning of, you don't want that.
Yeah.
And if so much so that I rarely ever saw the fun thing they did. Like now as an adult, I can look back and go, well, I see why they struggle with that, because I can see how much fun they must have had.
Yeah, and if I'm honest, like when I see, you'd see people that go on smoke breaks together, or there's a social element to smoking that some people had, especially in like the 80s and 90s,
yeah.
before it became a real pariah thing.
Right.
Now if you see people smoke, it's like, go, why don't you just relieve yourself on the children? Like it's,
right.
Now it's like a horrible, people know that it's a bad habit. But in the we know more about secondhand smoke. Back then we didn't. It was just like, oh, I'm getting cancer too?
Yeah.
Well, then get out of here. But back then it was just like, well, whatever. You know, if you want to cough your head off. But then you do see people that they go, you want to go smoke together? Like even when I go to comedy clubs now at Zany's, there's a few comics that smoke and they'll bum smokes from each other. And then they'll go outside and I'll be like, I wonder what their conversations are like.
Oh, yeah, it's very communal.
Like it's communal. And drinking's the same way.
Right.
You know, I don't smoke or drink, so it's like I don't. Maybe I miss out on those things, but yeah, I think that might have been what drew my brother in. I'd have to ask him.
Yeah, it's
interesting. It'll get you those things, and it's fine. And everybody's got their things. I have, like, everybody's got their vices. Mine usually involve gravy and sugar.
Well, I get food,
refined
does bring
sugar,
us together.
White, like, flour.
If you're having pancakes, I certainly want pancakes.
You had pancakes today.
I did, and I wanted them.
And that was after the EKG.
Well,
you went from EKG to be like just pouring syrup. You're like holding the syrup this high above the plate. I'm like, wow.
Look, if I'm not dying,
yeah.
I'm going over to the IHOP right after.
Once
this.
You get that all clear, it's like, let's go to Chili's.
I've had a few all clears this week, and that's great. But listen, January's coming, Johnny. Life is like.
Oh, so now is he pushing pause for the holidays? Because you're like, look, we're going to have all this.
What's going to be?
Literally, it's funny. It's like, it's two meals.
Hey.
Like Christmas and Thanksgiving is two meals. But we act like, well, look, I'll start my diet after the holiday.
It's not
two
just
meals.
Two meals, Johnny.
Well, I know there's cookies and brownies
cookies
and stuff.
Cookies around the whole time.
Not if your wife doesn't bake.
Someone already brought cookies to staff meeting this week.
That's true.
Like, it's the time of
everywhere.
The year people start just dropping off stuff.
My wife doesn't bake much, but she baked last night. She goes, I want to take a pumpkin pie to Thanksgiving on Thursday.
Yeah.
And I go, okay. So she bought the stuff, and then I go, when are you going to make it? She goes, well, I'm going to make one tonight that's like a trial pie. I go, oh, no.
Now we're going to eat a trial pie.
There's going to be two pies.
Yeah.
Because she makes a gluten-free crust or whatever for it.
Right.
So basically it's two because...
And you're like, that's still two less than I would normally eat, but still.
Yes. I remember one time we were in the store and there was regular pumpkin pie and I had not had any pumpkin pie. This was before they made a lot of gluten-free pumpkin pies. This was like 5 or 6 years ago when you didn't see it as much. So we're in Kroger getting groceries, and I think we were going to have Thanksgiving at home that year. We didn't go home, so we were just going to make a dinner, and there's this whole pumpkin pie, and I put it in the cart, and she goes, I can't have any of that. Are you going to eat a whole pumpkin pie tonight? I go, no, I'm going to eat this over the next couple of days. Like a normal.
I'm not an animal.
Yeah, I mean, over the next couple of days, I'm going to eat an entire pie.
If you know the pie is going to go all into you,
mm-hmm.
do you still put it into slices, or do you just start eating
with the fork from the tin
and just kind of leave it and come
out of the
back
middle?
To it?
What are you eating from the middle for?
Well, no, I'm saying though, like no, you might start from the end. But
what is it, soup? What are you doing?
I'm just saying, not from the middle.
I might slice it up, but yeah,
your first time you get a slice, but after that you just start eating from that slice.
Possibly,
forward.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Ends up looking like a
it's a mangle,
like the end of the Millennial Falcon.
Yeah,
like you've made a little
Is it millennial or millennium?
Millennium.
Millennial Falcon is...
That's
Star Wars when it's full of a bunch of like baristas and they're wearing beanies and scarves.
You know what? I always say Millennial Falcon because Millennium Falcon seems like improper English to me. It's millennial is an adjective.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a noun.
Yeah.
Millennials now. But I want it to be that we're describing the Falcon. Instead, Lucas just put two nouns together,
mm-hmm.
and I've never gotten over it, Johnny. So sometimes that slips out. I'm sorry.
The Millennial Falcon. I'm sure somebody's done that sketch already. I take it easy.
I doubt no one's. I take
it easy on millennials these days. It's tired, right?
We have a lot of millennial friends.
Well, it's just tired. It's a dumb thing.
None
of these generational tropes are ever true for a whole generation anyway. That's
right.
The truth.
Except millennials.
Because
I'm just
people
kidding,
acted
guys.
Like Gen X people were the we don't care generation too. Like,
right.
You know, we were post boomers. It's like, oh, these Gen X people. It's like, get out of my whatever. Stop. What are you doing? That's not true. It's not true of everybody. We are best, but.
I think Gen X. Of course, you and I are kind of in the Xennials.
I'm Gen
X. You're a little... Actually, yeah, you're older than me. I'm Xennial.
Yeah.
So I'm in between. I'm still
well,
X.
Didn't you say Gen X, the thing was analog childhood, digital...
That's Xennial.
Xennial.
Yeah. Xennial.
But I had kind of a digital...
Right. I was saying you
well,
kind of
my
have,
digital 20s, you know.
You have traits of both.
I didn't get my first laptop computer until I was in my, like, late 20s, though.
That was
just on me. That was just because I just didn't grow up around computers.
I had one in my early 20s. I still have it, by the way. I found it the other day.
Is it just gigantic, heavy?
No, it's like a mini one. I got to go to Iceland.
I remember that one. It had the little thing in the middle, the little cursor mover.
Yeah,
in the middle of the keyboard.
Yeah, it is like a Casio calculator compared to what we have today. But
yeah.
In terms of its tech. But you know what? I realized we were watching a show. About World War II,
mm-hmm.
and they were using typewriters, and I was like, I really am Xennial because I remember typing a few times. I had papers that had to be typed in like elementary school.
Yeah,
I typed them on typewriters at home. So I have turned in papers on typewriters, and obviously I use a computer. So like
you span the generations.
Who can say that really? I had a beeper. Did you have a beeper?
I did.
Yeah. Did you send just like poop or whatever? Like, you know, there was ways to.
Maybe.
Could you send poop? I don't think you send poop.
Boobs.
But what would be the number for B or P?
8.
But then that's
6 upside down.
A 6. Yeah, yeah. You're right. A 6 upside down will do it. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we were I just remember like everybody would do you'd send your number and then 911 was like a call me now.
Right.
That was the big thing on beepers.
Yeah.
It was like, here's my number, and don't ignore this.
Right.
And then you call, and they go like, can you get milk? Or what? Come on, don't abuse the 911 beep.
Right, I had to go find a quarter and a payphone.
Don't be the boy who cried beep over here.
It's like Michael Scott. He's like, yeah, I realize no one ever called me back when I just left regular messages. Now I leave 911 everywhere. Yeah.
Well, so then we got, I remember the second work phone I got working for my mom's ministry. She got us all these Nextel phones that had the walkie-talkie
yes,
feature.
I remember those, the big bricks.
They were gigantic, and they would just, you could interrupt someone and just blurt, you could just start blurting out things. I don't even know how this ever really took off. Like, I think originally I could see it for like construction sites and things.
Yeah.
Because they had two-way radios and a cell phone.
Yeah.
So this combined the two things into one clunky technology. But man, those Nextel phones, you'd just be at lunch and be like, hey, can you go by Lowe's and get can't silence it.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we doing?
Like you're a cop on the beat.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, yeah.
It's a 5150 in progress. You're just getting a
7 Adam 5. We're in, what do they say? Dang it.
7 Adam 5. Are you sure you want to be a police officer, John?
Well, yeah, they say 7 Adam 7. That's 7 A 5.
What is that? What is a 785?
That's
like
that's their number on the top of their car.
Oh, okay.
So that's the show us responding. 7 out of 5, show us responding, yeah. Do you not watch cop shows?
Do cops still use the thing where they put the magnet siren on top of their, or the light
if
on top of their
undercover?
Car?
Undercover?
I just haven't seen one of those. Even in movies, you don't see those
usually
anymore.
Usually the undercover cars now have all the lights
built in.
Where you can't see. Yeah, it's like,
yeah.
They're like the chargers or whatever.
You don't need to put the...
I can always tell, though, if I see any... Not that I drive fast or anything, Johnny.
Are you on the lookout for the undercover?
But I'm always looking out for, like, if it's a completely dark or completely white car,
mm-hmm.
and it's got, it's like a Charger or anything resembling.
Yeah, if you're driving a Charger.
And it's like a black.
You're one of two kinds of people. Right. And one of those kinds is a cop.
Right.
Or an ex-cop.
And if I see a Charger pull over on the side of the road,
yeah,
unmarked, I'm assuming
yeah
that I'm just slamming my brakes to stop doing 90.
He's laying in wait.
90 kilometers per hour. Sorry.
Well, this episode will not come out until after Thanksgiving, John.
Yeah.
But I was reading a thing about Twitter on Twitter about how like this guy who's a marriage therapist and just a clinician, and he talked about, I remember the tweet was a big tease because it said this guy can predict like 97% of divorces.
Wow.
When he meets with a couple, and how he determines it is if they have contempt for each other and they have no, there's no gratitude. He talks about how gratitude is like a complete indicator of someone's like overall mental health and overall relational health. And how he makes them play this game. He makes friends and family play this game, and it's called like gratitude tennis or something. You just go back and forth and say something you're grateful for. And eventually it gets to like what you're grateful for in the relationship, but just in general, you just do it. And people always roll their eyes, and he's just like, that's what contempt is. I roll is a physical manifestation of contempt, which is, he called it criticism with an air of superiority. And I never really heard it expressed that way.
Wow.
And I was like, gosh, I roll my eyes all the time. But it made me think, and I was like, you know what? Like, gratitude is this big antidote for a lot of what ails society.
Yeah.
When you think about it. And I think I'm trying to be more grateful, even though my mom used to do that thing. Did your mom do the thing of like, before you could eat Thanksgiving dinner, everybody had to go around the room and say one thing they were grateful for or thankful for?
Yeah.
And you'd be like, Mom, what are you doing? Just... the turkey is getting cold.
I'm grateful for the turkey.
Yeah.
Let me eat it.
But I think there is something to it, and I'm trying to just be more present. And because it's like the thing at the end of The Office when Andy had that great line where he said, like, how come you never know it's the good old days when you're in them? You know? And I feel like my wife and I and my family, we're in kind of a really sweet season, and I don't want to, like, miss it by being ungrateful or being, like, waiting for the next big thing. So it's kind of, I'm being a little contemplative this week more than I'm making myself be contemplative.
That's good.
It's not in my nature. It's my nature to be very more cynical and snarky, but I'm trying to be like, you know what? There's pretty great stuff. I'm very lucky.
Yeah. No, I think it's good. I think it's the holiday lends itself somewhat to that, but I think very few of us really, you know, take Thanksgiving as a chance to, you know, contemplate our gratitude outside of, like you said, of those sort of platitude driven things. But I, you know, when you were there Sunday, I was talking about sort of that age old battle between the optimist and the person who calls themselves the realist.
Right.
Cause we were in Philippians 4 about whatsoever things are true and noble and pure, to think on those things. And sort of that, for those of us who are more skeptical, or, you know, I think I start off my life, you would have thought of me as an optimist probably.
When you almost like a cockeyed optimist where you were in denial.
Yeah.
I remember the famous one is the girl that you were dating, you'd be like, she's doing better. And we would all laugh because you always would defend her.
Oh,
because you needed it to be true so badly.
Yeah, but I still have a fundamental belief that people will not let me down.
Yeah, but there's a will not let you down and are currently letting you down.
Correct.
But you're in denial of.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the part of it that was like annoying to us. We were like, she's not getting better.
And it's,
you're burying your head. So that's the part of it where.
It wasn't all her.
No. You were a problem.
Our compatibility.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is,
that's part of
it. We're going to be there. It's going to get better. No.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, so I definitely would have pegged you more of a, John is someone who will talk himself out of feeling bad about something, even if he needs to sit in this emotion and feel bad about it. He'll try to talk himself out of it because he's so sharp in his mind. He'll be like, it's like the old joke about the Pentecostal and the Baptist and the Methodist that go to hell or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the punchline of the joke is the Pentecostal's just in the corner going, I'm not in hell. I'm not in hell. I'm not. He's just confessing his way out of it like a Pentecostal would. So that's kind of like, I got that bent from you. Not to like an umpteenth degree where it was annoying and we couldn't be friends, but it was just like, I noticed you're way more likely to do that than I was.
Yeah. Well, whatever you did to influence me the other way, it worked.
Oh, you're way in the pit of despair now with me. It's perfect.
I mean,
I'm glad to help.
I think that, you know, I think I said that, like, guys, do you really want to take marriage advice from someone, you know, who's never been married?
Yeah.
Or do you want to take financial advice from someone who's always behind on their bills? And I was like, if you want to talk about the struggle with contentment, now I can proclaim myself an expert. I'm an expert struggler with this issue of contentment and what to do with joy in difficult situations or gratitude, like to your thing. I mean, and Paul kind of just spitballs all these things in chapter 4. It's very much like the huge things, but they're not situational. They're really more like broad ranging. And, but we take them as situational, as we say, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go hit this ball harder because of that. And it's really, really coming out of, though, like, actually, I've learned in all situations and suffering and in not suffering and riches and in poverty, I've learned how to be content. The secret is I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.
Yeah.
And that age-old battle between that realist and pessimist, you know, I've kind of come to the conclusion that both are wrong. That if you really want to be a realist, then there really is something good always to be thankful for.
You're ignoring the good things if you're only like focusing on the bad, going, well, I'm being realistic. It's like, no, you're ignoring the good things.
Right. To just see the downside of something.
Yeah.
I've lived as both. Mm-hmm. I've lived as I don't want to see the bad, you know, and I've lived as I can't see the good. And the reality is, and that's why Paul says, if there's anything, and there always is, if there's anything praiseworthy, then you can balance or shepherd your thinking. And that was sort of the main thought. Like your thoughts are like little sheep. You know, you don't need to hate them. They're a part of you.
Yeah.
You need to corral them or pay attention to where they're going.
Right. Shave them. Make sweaters of them.
Exactly. Spiritually, of course.
And a spiritual sweater.
Oh, my goodness. But, you know, if I see my thoughts wandering towards the cliff of despair, it may feel like that's reality, and there may be something worth feeling despair over.
Yeah.
But there's never a moment, especially in Christ, where that's the whole of reality. So I think that's where it gets me, is when the circumstance becomes the whole. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, again, putting your thumb up in front of your eye makes it look bigger than the whole room.
Right. Or like right now, I'm crushing your head.
Crush your head. Crush.
Yeah.
And so I just want to be a person that I still tend to, I don't know if it's always thoughts, it's also feelings. Mm-hmm. Like when I went into that Vanderbilt appointment, my blood pressure was through the roof, though I wasn't actively nervous.
Yeah,
I have blood drawn all the time, all those things, but I've just learned, and I turned to the nurse and I said, well, here's the deal. I can't fake blood pressure.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be like a CIA operative to do that.
Right.
Like, I can think I'm not nervous, you know, but the day before my bronchoscopy, same thing, blood pressure through the roof, or the day of. She was like, are you feeling nervous? I was like, nope, but I can't fake that. My body is feeling what it's going to do.
Yeah, I wonder what they do with people who are nervous all the time. Like when they're trying to give you a polygraph test and you're not lying, you're just nervous about being in the polygraph test,
yeah.
They're like, this guy's a liar. No, he's just really jittery.
Yeah. And he's
not used to having electrodes hooked up to him. They're like, sir, do you have lotion on? No, I'm not a liar.
Maybe.
Maybe I do. Sir, we detect lotion. It said you were being deceptive when you said the thing about the lotion.
I use moisturizing soap. I'm sorry. but I think, to say, hey, there's always something, and it's very, my wife has this in our bathroom on, you know, this piece of art. There's always something to be thankful for. Always, 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 always.
That's in your bathroom.
It's in the bathroom.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think it's like, it's not relative
to the
bathroom. But I mean, I suppose you could be thankful there as well. But but I think, like,
that's next level gratitude right there. Lord, I just thank you. Flush. That's beautiful.
Well, I guess if you
what
could,
an interesting family
if you
have.
Couldn't go.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, but I think that's what's weird. What suffering does make you aware of what you had that you weren't thankful for when you had it.
Yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. like this is a weird thing. Now looking back over this year, this is like the year of medical things for me.
Yeah.
Like, I started the year with COVID, you know, pretty decent, bad case. Right after that, broke my finger, spent 6 months basically in a splint with my finger. in the middle of that, I have this major upper respiratory issue that also turns into shingles that almost, we think, turns into this scan. We're not sure what it – I mean, it's just crazy. All the way up to, like, today. Here I am going to get an EKG.
Yeah, I mean, the lung thing turned into a cancer scare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a weird – and I remember in the middle of not knowing if I had cancer, in that moment, I'm suddenly so aware of the health that I had had the whole time up to that moment.
Yeah.
Health that I was not – I mean, I'm always – I think I'm always kind of thankful for health because I'm forecasting bad things, you know, but – in that moment, like, I would give anything to just not have that worry again.
Yeah.
I get the whole making a deal with God type thing when you're in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Totally understand totally that emotion because it's so big right then. Mm-hmm. Like, I would give anything. And I did the other day. Sadie was, you know, having a rough moment about something. And as her dad, I was able to just come in. And it was very clear to me what she needed from me. Mm-hmm. And I was able to, you know, give her affection and just a little bit of just encouragement. And it really made a difference for her. And I was almost in tears later because I remembered, like, there was a moment where I thought I wouldn't be there to do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, God, you let me stay, you know? So, like, without the suffering, though, I don't know if you can.
Right. You can't get that perspective without it.
You can't. I don't want the suffering. But that's what Paul was saying. Like, the secret is I've suffered enough to know now.
Yeah.
That I really can, Jesus can sustain me in all, will sustain me in all things. That's including death. But the life you have though, yeah, the moment to go, oh, I know there was moments I wasn't sure about this and it's been here and this is the greatest gift. I try to be that way about my marriage. And I think you're that way too about your marriage. I will say this to you to encourage you, whether you know this or not, you are constantly saying things that are expressions of gratitude about Curry.
Yeah.
To me, just in just us talking all the time. And I think you live grateful for your marriage.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like I'm becoming more and more aware of it. I think the longer you've been with somebody, you're like, oh, wow, this, or you see other people, or it doesn't work out. And I think about how young we were too. And I just go, man, that could have gone sideways so fast because we're so different than those kids who got married. And, I'm very grateful. I think I'm a lot. I'm one of those people where you wouldn't say I'm a jerk and you wouldn't say that I'm a bad person, but there might be people in my life that go, Johnny's a lot, you know, maybe not.
Yeah. I have that internal critic, that particular critic that says I'm too much. Yeah. And here's the thing. I believe in my case, it's true. This is not just like a narrative thing. I don't think you're not really. I don't think you're a lot like I'm a lot, but I don't think people who think that about themselves feel that others are that way. Like, the things about you that you think are a lot are things I'm like, oh, that's no big deal.
Yeah.
Because I'm...
You're like, this other thing I need you to work on.
Now, this thing really bothers me. But
work on that.
But it's funny how we can be loyal or empathetic to others in a way that it's really difficult to be towards ourselves.
Hey, it's hard to be good to yourself. Hey, I need you to lay off my buddy John. He's my pal.
And I hated that kind of stuff because it sounds silly to say.
Yeah.
But I do, and I think you could take it too far, but I do believe if you loathe yourself, which is how I spent a lot of my life doing, like, you do limit what you can receive from God, what you can receive from others. You really, really do, because you won't see your value of why he would want to give it.
Well, we're learning that even in, like, therapy and things like that now. I read these reports and they talk about how, like, if you want to make real wholesale changes in your personality and in your behavior, you can't do it by, like, a punitive style of, like, coaching.
Yeah.
Like, if you see these guys like, just get up and do it.
Right.
You know, like, that doesn't work. You have to befriend yourself.
Yep.
Like, you can't, if you want to lose 30 pounds, you can't hate yourself enough to lose 30 pounds. You can love yourself enough to go, let's get healthy.
Right.
If you lose 30 pounds because you hate yourself, it's either not going to stay off or you're going to do it in a really unhealthy way.
Right.
It doesn't work. So you have to go, like, I want to train for this race. I'm going to run every day and you can't even do it for other people. That's the other part, is you can't go, like, I love Sadie so much, I want to be a healthy dad for her.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to do, you can do that for a little while, but eventually it has to be for you. And I think we were raised in that thing of like anything that hinted like that sounded like humanism to us, so we wouldn't do it.
Right.
We'd be like, oh, I'm in the flesh.
Yeah.
But God gave us this symbiotic relationship with our bodies. We're supposed to love ourselves. That's a type and shadow of his love for us. Like, it's okay. There's obviously a road too far when you can get way too into yourself and into your looks and all those other things. But I just think we're so afraid of being selfish that we think we should hate ourselves.
Well, when Jesus gave the second part of the greatest commandment, when he identified the way you could love others to the best of your ability,
yeah,
he compared it to the way you love yourself.
Yeah. I think he had you in mind. He was like, I want you to love me as John loves John. Because John Driver loves him some John.
I will say, though, that it when you say love your neighbors, you love yourself. And I tell all the churches all the time, like, that's hard because I don't really love myself that much
right.
most of the time.
We think it's like, it's okay that I don't like this guy in traffic
because I
hate myself too.
Yeah.
Yeah. We give ourselves an out.
Yeah, it really is. Like, I had to come to the realization, like, John, you don't even do that right.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on in those two. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind, your strength. And love your neighbor as yourself. There's a lot going on. Like, you'll spend, and that's why he said these are the two that encompass all the others. They're not just simple things.
You're
like, there is a lot of complexity and depth and nuance in that. Like, I just think I can love my neighbor. Like, I don't love myself. Well, there you go. There's work to do there.
Yeah.
You know, then do I treat my neighbor as I want to be treated? Which, I mean, the golden rule is kind of wrapped up in those things.
Yeah.
You know, no, I don't. Like, I actually, it's crazy. Do I give my neighbor the mercy that I wish was given to me? That's really what that should be saying. Not just I did a good deed for him. But
yeah, I think about it. Like, I'm a self-employed comedian, so I hate my boss, but I also get to talk crap about him on stage.
That's true.
So that's like perfect revenge.
You get paid to talk crap about your boss on stage. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's better than that?
That's amazing.
That's the best.
Well, guys, we hope that you have found this episode the best. And
Thanksgiving's already over for you if you're listening to this the following Monday, but we hope it went well. We hope Uncle Frank did not tell you you were going to hell because you had an earring or a tattoo or who you voted for. Whatever happened at Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
It's over. Let's put it under
you get a few more weeks to have to experience it all again.
We hope you're having leftovers right now as you listen to this. You're having you're eating from that tin of pumpkin pie with a fork.
Yeah.
In bed, maybe.
Maybe.
That's okay.
No, it's fine.
You need this time to just, decompress.
Yeah. Just don't. Yes. No, no. There's no don't. Just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So, hey, we made a pretty cool announcement last week.
That's right. Life Audio has taken us on to their roster. And so some exciting changes are coming to the show. And you'll start seeing those roll up. There'll be like little added bumpers and things like that that give us a little bit of a pedigree.
Oh.
You'll be like, fancy podcast.
Well, look at this.
Yeah. And then people will be like, they've changed.
Ah, this really.
I liked them when they just.
They're just normal guys.
They're so corporate now.
I do hope at some point we get to do, because they'll be putting some ads in.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't necessarily yet get to do like an ad that we get to read. That could come.
Ooh, yeah.
But
we can just be like stamps.com, everybody.
Yeah, my fear of that is that we couldn't do it without making fun of the product. We've been doing not sponsored bys for so long.
I hope I can still.
That we make fun of the product.
There'll actually be sponsored bys, so what?
Right, but so if you make a joke about stamps.com.
Oh, and then what if that scares them away from everyone?
Like, well, wait a second, But, I mean, isn't that kind of what everybody does? Isn't that what Geico does? I mean, they're not
making
fun of
I'm trying to think
if
there's any of those not sponsored bys that I would ever think would ever even look our way. And I've made some real products that I've made fun of, for sure.
Yeah.
But
if you guys haven't read in our show notes the not sponsored
ones. Well, no, I say them out loud now in the pre-show.
Oh, that's
so
true. But if they're the old episodes, they're really funny.
There's a bunch of them.
Johnny it's writes over a really funny joke every week on not sponsored by.
Every year. Every year, one he gets.
The other's just okay.
Yeah. But so that would be interesting. It's interesting to see what they choose, what strange bedfellows they put with us.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's part of the game, John.
Yeah. This episode brought to you by Strange Bedfellows.
Yeah.
We should start a mattress company called Strange Bedfellows.
Hey.
It'd be great. Like, the mattresses aren't like rectangular or square.
Yeah, they're like rhombuses. Only one of you has room.
That'd be great.
Yeah, Strange Bedfellows.
I wonder if we haven't got that URL, do it now.
Yeah.
StrangeBedfellows.com. But you can go to our actual URL.
Talkaboutthatpodcast.com. over 200 archived episodes for you as you travel for your holiday excursions down Holiday Road.
Catch up on a few of those episodes with your family, friends,
enemies,
children. Yeah, bring everyone along. Dogs. There's something for everyone.
Yeah,
really. You can also follow Johnny on his link tree. Just go find Johnny W, J-O-N-N-I-E-W.
Follow me on socials. I'm putting out two or three clips a week now. Oh, these podcast clips are starting to come out as video clips. That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
And we're getting some traction on the old Chinese app called TikTok. I don't know if you saw that.
Maybe.
I've had some TikToks got like 200,000 views now.
Wow.
So I don't know what that means. Yeah. And it's not really affected me in any positive way other than being like, look at this. People are...
Hey.
Leaving one out of five of these comments is really weird and sounds like it's from a bot. That's fun. So find me on there. I'm on TikTok.
It's
I'm
everything
on
you dreamed of.
Facebook,
be.
Yeah.
That's all you really wanted when you
go to Amazon. Day. Look up John Driver's books. So many books. There's one behind you right now, the audio version of Not So Black and White. That'd be a great Christmas gift for somebody.
It would, yeah. You can go download the audiobook of Not So Black and White by Reggie Dabbs and John Driver. And Reggie and I actually spent a week in a studio in Nashville recording this audiobook. Mm-hmm. And it was an experience, and it was awesome. So you can hear our voices. If you like what you hear in the podcast...
And why
you could hear an entire book with me and Reggie talking just like this.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, it's really less NPR and more book reading, but anyway.
Yeah.
Do you have an NPR voice?
No. Yeah. This is it.
This is it.
I definitely have a more amplified, you know, the intensity of my southernness goes up when I'm doing comedy, probably. I have more of a character on stage. It's probably 20% amplified.
Yeah.
This is more of a, just my sitting around Johnny voice.
This is you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your voicemail, too, has a professional. I don't have told you that. You have a Southern on stage. Your voicemail has a very Midwestern.
Thank you for calling.
Hey, Johnny. I leave a message after the tone. Yeah.
That's weird. Am I smoking? I don't know.
Call Iris, my agent. Anyway, so. Hey, say hi to Iris for me.
I will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please don't. Please don't call me again. Who's leaving voicemails anyway? Just text me. That's what every voicemail should just say. Hey, this is Johnny. Just text me. Beep. That's it.
Yeah.
Don't leave a voicemail for people.
It's one of those latest Becoming Your Parent commercials. For, okay, where did they go wrong? Well, he only gave his number once. He's like, didn't he give his number?
Yeah.
I already see who's calling, you know. Well, you know, he didn't, and he goes, he shouldn't let the voicemail at all. Just text him.
Yeah, it's true. So,
hey, guys, but you could leave us messages via email. You can email me at john@johndriver.com with any questions, comments, other things. Leave a review.
Tweet us
wherever you listen to podcasts.
We love to hear from you guys.
Yeah, and stay buckled up, man, for some new stuff coming up soon. About mid December, you should see our sort of migration over to Life Audio Podcast Network. Grateful to be a part of that roster and that team. So, guys, we're grateful that you spent the time with us today. We'll do it again next week. On
talk about that.
Feeling stressed? Let's take better care of you. I'm Bonnie Gray, the host of Breathe, the Stress Less podcast. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.